Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome today. This is Chris with New Cyber Frontier.
This is Alex with Colorado Equals Security.
And this is Rob Reck with Colorado Equals Security. We're doing a special joint episode this week where we're going to get both our podcasts together and get to know each other a little bit, share what we're doing here in Colorado on the various metro areas. So, Chris, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. So, man, I'm glad to connect up with you guys. It's good to have some people in a local area that I could sit down with and share the same stories, the same difficulties, the same problems when we lose an hour's worth of feed. We just had it happen, by the way, but we're back on now.
I love recording multiple times.
Yeah, technology is hard. We'll say that. Technology is hard. So, Chris, I know we had a chance to get to know a little bit about what you guys do in your podcast. I know my listeners may or may not have had familiarity with New Cyber Frontier. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what does your podcast specialize in, what do you do, and why are you doing it?
Sure. So, my podcast, I've been running for about a year here in September, so another month or so. And we focus on the economic development aspect of cybersecurity, and mostly focused in Colorado Springs, but we also have really expanded out and have almost a worldwide presence. So I know we've been downloaded in over 75 countries last time I checked, and quite a bit in the United States. We have a news correspondent that comes on monthly from Washington, D.C. There's a really big news provider there. His name is Chuck Brooks. And we really just we started out talking to a lot of local, you know, general CEO. We've had the governor of Colorado. We've had the mayor of Colorado Springs. We've had a lot of nonprofit organizations from both Denver, Colorado, a lot of companies and CEOs from Denver and Colorado, and a lot of presence from the Department of Homeland Security, organizations around the military in Colorado Springs, and a lot of technical experts in different areas of cyber. So we range in a lot of areas, but do about a 30-minute show and try to have a guest on every time, or, you know, sometimes we do those news updates.
So it's news or a guest in each show? Is that how you break it down?
Usually that's kind of the way we do. I have special episodes I actually run for the news in Colorado and the news in Washington, D.C. And you'll see those come out sometimes in addition to my interviews. I get an interview out every week. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times when we have those special releases, they'll come out in addition to the interviews.
So sometimes a couple times a week.
Yeah, we've had a couple times a week. I think we're on episode 57 this week and haven't even been a year yet. So I probably had about 6 or 7 different episodes that we slid in there at different times for different reasons. And we do, if we have a special event coming up in Colorado, something local, like the AVSIA did one, ISSA does special events, when the NCC has a special event, we'll come in, record that right away, and put that one out that week. Whereas in the interviews, I backlog them, and I think I have like 30 or 40 now pre-recorded that I'll release over time.
You have 30 or 40 waiting to go right now?
Yeah, at least.
That's a lot, yeah.
Overachiever.
Well, you know, it's once you get, and you guys will see this happen too, once you get to a certain point, it starts to kind of grow on itself. And you get people coming to you more so than your reach out to try and get new guests on.
Yeah. So I think our show is fairly similar. You know, we are focusing on security in Colorado, Colorado as a whole, but, you know, as that we're in Denver, we focus a little bit more on the Denver area. And our show, the first, you know, 15-ish minutes is news. So we'll go through, you know, news of local security startups. Maybe it's, you know, other things that are going on in the Colorado security community here. Could be some just general sort of nerdy news that maybe isn't even security related. Then we look at events that are coming up. So talking about whether it's ISSA or ISACA, or OWASP, other events that are happening in the Colorado area around security, and then a look at the jobs that are out there, sort of an interesting look at jobs, not necessarily, you know, reading back all the posts that are out there on, you know, on Monster or something like that, but things that seem interesting to us.
So we do the 15 or so minutes of the newscast, and then we have a 30 to 45 minute feature interview per episode, where it's just someone in the Colorado community that we thought folks would like to get to know, whether it's the founder of one of those security startups, maybe a CISO for a large company in town, or someone who's running in one of those community nonprofits, or someone else who just does cool stuff in the area. We try and sit with those folks, get to know them, and let our audience get to know them as well. In addition to doing the newscast about the events, we also have a website where we aggregate, you know, we have a calendar of events for all of the different security events in Colorado that we're aware of. And we go out, you know, 6 months into the future with a lot of events. And I'll tell you, Chris, I'm shocked. You know, there's an event every day, you know, going on somewhere in Colorado that you can go get free education, get lots and lots of networking opportunities.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
If you're ever curious, you know, how can I get to go meet some people, take a look at the calendar of events, because there's a ton of choices out there.
Yeah, I think our focus has been a little bit more interview-centric. I did listen to yours, and I saw some of the newscast, where we actually started out working with the National Cybersecurity Center to try and just get an awareness of all the people that were involved. Because so many times there's people that are right down the road from you, running a company or doing something that you could use, you could use support with, but we don't even know who they are. So I started this kind of making a repository of interviewing all the people that were involved with the effort as kind of the starting point of where the podcast has come from. And news has kind of just flowed in as a requirement. I guess at first I saw that there were so many people out there with news that we really focused on what's the possible, what's the future look like? What are we doing with economic development around cyber?
Yeah,
I think for us it focused on the organizations was really the genesis of why we started. You know, you're saying there's so many people that could be right down the road from you and you don't know it. You know, both Rob and I have been involved in ISSA here in Denver, but there's so many other groups that are around too. And you know, if you're a member of one, you may or may not even know that these other ones exist.
Yeah, it's very siloed, and there's no one place to get to know. Well, what are all of the different security groups in the Colorado area? There's no way to know it, and we decided, hey, there's a need for it. You know, if all you know about is ISOCA and you want to be a pen tester, you're going to be really frustrated by the content available to you. And vice versa, if all you know about is Cloud Security Alliance and you really want to understand more about audit into a framework, and you've never heard of ISOCA, you're going to be really disappointed. So we try and give folks a landing place where they can figure out what's the right group for me and how do I get plugged in with those folks. So this is a chance for us to make sure the right people are getting access to the right resources.
Interesting. You know, and a lot I've taken almost the technology approach rather than the groups. So likewise, we're so siloed, and I saw it as a lot of times an issue of we're siloed in our technology area. And we know in depth because we spent our whole life in the technology area, but cybersecurity spans so many technology areas that we might even know when we need to engage another area. So kind of focusing on a lot of my interviews start out where I have the guest, give me a value add. I don't want you to sell a product. I don't want you to try and, you know, it doesn't want it to be a 30-minute advertisement for a product, but give me something that my guests can learn from, even if it's just, and a lot of times I'll have them do a step 1, 2, 3 of how people can get involved with what they're doing or their particular silo, as you almost say there. You know, how are we, can we connect those items and pull it all together?
So Chris, I'm guessing that the podcasting gig doesn't pay your bills every day. You know, maybe making a little bit here and there, but I'm pretty sure that you have a day job. So so what is it that you do for your day job?
Yeah, we all kind of do that, huh? And you know, our podcast, we hope that we'll get visibility and they'll grow. And we've started to pull in some sponsors, and I know you guys probably will get to that point as well. But my day job, I am the lead faculty for cybersecurity for CSIT Cybersecurity at Colorado Tech.
Nice. And so Colorado Technical University down there in Colorado Springs, what sort of programs do they offer for cybersecurity?
They have a couple programs. It depends on, you know, what your needs are and what your industry focus is. A lot of times we have a few bachelors of cybersecurity degrees, one in computer system security and one in information assurance. And then we have a bachelor's in IT with a security concentration. And then we have a master's in computer science with a computer system security concentration and a master's in IT with a security concentration as well.
I'm curious, where do you see the graduates of your programs ending up? Are they going to private industry? Are they, you know, in Colorado Springs, there's a lot of government work. Are they going to work for the government?
You know, we have both. And we actually have a campus here in Colorado in Aurora and one in Colorado Springs. So there's one in Denver as well. And they have a really big online presence where I focus most on the campus. The Colorado Tech also has a really big online presence. The degrees that the BS in cyber, you'll see the one with computer system security focus, that's where a lot of development, people that are going to look at developing software, developing next generation systems will head to that degree. Information assurance is kind of the putting the global architecture of companies together for cyber. And then the IT and security specialization is where a lot of our penetration testers and our hackers and the people who want to be hands-on IT using applications, but even the network forensics and global forensics and penetration testing, using a lot of those tools is more the IT side focus.
Nice. Well, you know, as much as we would love it to for Rob and I, this doesn't pay any bills. So
it's a net negative. Yes,
it is. Yes, it generates bills. It doesn't pay any bills. Yeah. So we also have day jobs. I am the Chief Information Security Officer for Pulte Financial Services. So I run the security program there. Got a team that makes sure that the information of all our customers stays safe.
And this is Rob Reck. I am the CISO for Ping Identity. Ping is a security company and headquartered in Denver. We do identity and access management software and services. We were a startup. We're about 550 employees now. And it's kind of international. So it's been a neat opportunity to, I've been there for about a year and a half, and we've had about 50% growth in the last year and a half from 360 employees to where we are now. That's been pretty fun. It's really an interesting thing to be doing security at a security company where you have a lot of people who are really expert at one very small part of security. There's probably 150 people at Ping who are way better than I am at identity and access management, which is something that's under my purview.
Yeah.
But they don't understand how that fits into the bigger context. So it's really easy to make a misstep in that one area, or at least a perceived misstep since the bigger companies.
I'm curious about Ping there. I mean, how many different areas in cybersecurity do you feel like you span?
What does Ping do or what I do?
The Ping in general. You know,
so,
I mean,
so we make identity and access management software. Uh-huh. And so, you know, identifying users. So it's five different capabilities. Multi-factor authentication. So you can do two-factor, push to mobile phones, hardware tokens. We do that stuff. We do single sign-on and federated access. So, you know, making sure you don't have to remember a million different passwords. We do access security. So that's the runtime application security where we can enforce rights within the application, terminate users mid-session, that kind of stuff. We do user directories. So you can have a massively scalable directory. We do data governance, which gives us the chance to say, you know, data can only go here, only these people can get access to it. Kind of, you know, data governance is what that category is called.
Where do you see the most growth?
As an industry, it's all growing pretty quickly. For Ping, who's started, they've been a single sign-on company for the longest. Now, that's the smallest growth section for us because we've added new capabilities and we add that to customers as we go. Mm-hmm. You know, so multi-factor certainly blown up in the last few years with all the credential thefts that happen out there in the wild. If you don't have MFA on your accounts yet, you're not doing the bare minimum in order to keep your account safe.
Now, that acronym, you can describe that.
Multi-factor authentication.
Okay. Yeah.
The ability to say it's not just username and password. We're also going to add on, you know, a one-time password or an RSA token. You guys are probably familiar with that. Certificate-based authentication. There's something in addition to username and password.
Okay. So, and now, Alex, you work with one company protecting their data, not really selling the features of cybersecurity. What do you see as a difference in kind of what we heard from Rob versus, you know, what you see in your work?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of interesting. Rob and I have similar jobs in one aspect, and he has, you know, a very different job in another aspect. He has to make sure that the products that they deliver are secure, in addition to making sure that the company itself is secure. I'll say I just have to make sure that our company is secure. So, you know, I spend a lot of my time, you know, focusing on, you know, sort of the nuts and bolts of security, you know, security monitoring, incident management, developing the folks on my team to make them better security engineers and security analysts. You know, I'm also in charge of the risk management function, technology risk management function for our company. So doing risk assessments and, mm-hmm. and managing risks for the organization, as well as IT compliance. So, you know, we're a public company and we're beholden to SOX. You know, we do process some credit cards. So we have a little bit of PCI, stuff like that. So it's similar, but different.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It sounds like the big difference is you're looking at one company beholden to what they do. You also, though, Rob, you look at your company internally as well as products, or are you on one side or the other?
We do. I make sure our products are secure as well. So ensuring the security is built into the SDLC. You know, as we create products, as we make changes to products, security needs to be factored in and you know, taken very seriously as a security company. And then we also have a managed service. So we're in AWS and need to make sure that platform is secured from an infrastructure, software, and a practices perspective, all the way across the board.
Okay.
Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
So Chris, you know, I know one of the things that you also do down in the Springs is that you're on the board of the NCC, the National Cyber Center down there. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the NCC and what they do and what your role with them is.
Yeah, I'm on board with one of the legs, which is the Cyber Institute. So they have three legs. One is their training for government officials and board people that sit on boards of companies. The second is their emergency response, so helping companies that have had a cyber emergency actually jumping on, and you know, a lot of the smaller companies that don't have groups and big security infrastructure, you know, if they're 50 people in the company and they haven't got big enough where they have that, they help them if they have a breach or something like that. And the third leg is the Cyber Institute, which is looking at research and development for next generation cybersecurity industry in general, and training as well of what's required for next generation. So that's where my interests lie, because I work so much with, you know, what's the next generation need for cybersecurity. I listen to you guys working, you know, on networks, your own companies, you know, protection, information assurance of, you know, your own systems. I have spent most of my life developing the next generation, designing the software, looking at the architecture, with the background in cryptographic key management, which is those deep root of trust. How do you set up the encryption from one place to another, or learn how to, you know, authenticate between one piece of software, one device, and another? So I was really interested in with the NCC and getting involved with, you know, what's the next generation of cyber, and also as a PhD candidate at UCCS, a lot of my research is right in line with how does the cyber community and the NCC being part of that, you know, really get their place in the market to help cybersecurity design the next generation and what's needed.
So, okay. So what is the next generation? I imagine if you're, if you're a PhD candidate, you're doing some research. What technologies or, you know, fundamental needs do you see coming up that are the next generation for cybersecurity?
So I spend the bulk of my time, and this, we just opened up a whole new can of worms here, but I spend the bulk of my time looking at what is missing in the security infrastructure, so an ecosystem. We do confidentiality, integrity, which is encrypting or checking the integrity of data hasn't changed regularly in applications all across the industry. But adding the next piece to it is, you know, your bank account, when you log on, you log on the first time. And when you go to change your password 5 minutes from then or make a transfer of money, it has you re-authenticate. So that re-authentication is adding the time aspect to authentication, to knowing who the user is. And adding that time aspect is something that is known as trust. So trust in authentication, trust in integrity, trust in non-repudiation, which is the implementation of, do I know that a transaction happened, like a bank wire or whatever, and I can trust that that happened with somebody I don't know that's on the other side of the world. So adding the time aspect to any of those operations in cybersecurity to enable trust is what I do research on. And how is that implemented between organizations to trust each other, for transactions, for people, for anonymous transactions over the internet, but adding that next generation of, we need to have trust in all these areas that we now do single, instantaneous in time transactions on.
So how is it that you get that trust? You know, I think most trust systems that we've seen, you know, in the past have been, you know, like certificates. So it's, hey, I'm trusting some third party that says that these people are trustworthy, or, you know, maybe it's exchanging some sort of keys, but mm-hmm. there's probably either some face-to-face or some other, you know, method for exchanging those. What do you see for the method of gaining this trust?
Well, it's not just one operation. And that's the thing is, we, all the things you talked about, if we took the best practices in cybersecurity from 50 different industries that are siloed and implementing a little piece of this differently and started integrating together and look at how can we make the best of both worlds? How can we unify a security model that, it, you know, even with an organization like the NCC that offers a governance aspect, kind of like you were saying with the certificates, the third party that adds that trust, but not just at the computer-to-computer level, but at the systems, the components that go into the computer, and then the onboard the software, as you know, how trusting all the pieces and components in your system as they boot up, and then transferring that trust over to the network, and then that trust, once you have trusted devices and network, you can transfer proof of origin of device of data over to data models, and then link that to people. So it's linking all those five trust chains along with the inner organization, the network, the different network types, so physical networks, people networks, organization networks, and product-to-product networks. So taking an approach of linking all those with a lot of known technologies, but making the best of all worlds is where my research lies.
So we've talked quite a bit about Forrester's Zero Trust model. Are you familiar with Forrester's work on that?
A little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. They're, you know, I'd say the nut of it is they want to remove any trust based on the network from which you're connecting. That's mm-hmm. what it comes down to. And, you know, traditional computing environments, you have a trusted inner, you know, corporate network, mm-hmm. and then anything else is considered untrusted. And they're saying, no, we consider all networks untrusted, and we're going to get trust based on devices, authorization, authentication, and then put security around the resources themselves, and then have a robust authentication policy that's going to have a risk engine. And I think you're really talking about a risk engine when you talk about those five different types of trust. So really, it's similar to what you're saying, although they're pretty firm on, you know, removing trust from networks themselves, as it's they don't think that the fact that you're plugged into that network should impart any additional trust to your device.
You know, I understand that. I have a background in critical infrastructure, and I call it electromechanical operations. Things that if you're turning on a gas line in your backyard, or the stoplight in front of your house, or the electric power to, you know, all these infrastructure things, the network trust becomes a little more important. So in a hybrid model of, you know, we're going to cloud so much and entirely virtualized and dynamically allocated resources, but yet on the other side, we have these very high trust-centric need in the network for critical infrastructure. And bridging that gap is where a lot of the work I talked to you about, the different trust chains and the network types, really fits together.
Is it because you can't put a certificate on that device? You can't get trust in that device? It has to be based on where it's plugged in because there's nothing else you can do? Is that what you're getting at?
In a way, when you look at a virtual cloud resource or whatever, the pretense of virtuality was to copy a machine 100% and not be able to tell the difference between a physical piece of hardware machine and a virtual machine. And in doing so, we've lost that connection between what is physical and where is it at, where is it plugged into the network, in a lot of our virtuality. So that connection is required in certain areas, but not in others. So kind of best of both worlds, where is it needed, where is it not, and how do we make that interface work together?
Interesting.
So we have about 5 minutes left here, and this has been a fantastic conversation. Chris, I'd like to just ask you kind of an open question. What's the message you'd have for the Colorado community, you know, as they go about their day? Maybe they're driving to work right now. What's your message for them that you'd like to see, or you'd like to just leave them with?
This is the biggest thing I love to say about, you know, what's going on in Colorado and what's going on with the industry in the whole, is you hear so much news that is gloom and doom. So much hacking, things are going wrong, the end of the world. I like to remind people that, you know, we're not at the end of the world in cybersecurity. We're at the very infancy of a brand new industry that just hasn't been defined yet. And when we get the opportunity here in Colorado, and with all the resources and all the central, you know, different capabilities we have here, of being at the heart of a brand new industry that in our lifetime will just be the most, you know, important part of our world, because our world is virtual now. And I talked to Rebecca Chomp at Denver University. She coined a phrase between her and J.B. Holtz and said, you know, cybersecurity is the existential question of our age that we need to answer. Basically, we have to define and find out how we're going to do this for our own existence, or we're not going to get to, you know, it's something that's that important. And that we have that opportunity here in Colorado now with everything that's going on and with the governor's initiative on economic development. And it's just, it's exciting times. It's not the end of the world.
I wonder if the climate change scientists might disagree with what the existential question of our lifetime is, but I think it's a fun point anyway, and certainly it's something we need to figure out. Alex, what do you think? What do you want to leave the audience with?
Sort of on top of that, I think, you know, accentuating the positive, I'm going to steal Rob's thunder here. Rob's always about being positive. I think looking at the bright side of everything, as opposed to looking at the doom and gloom, you know, how we can make a difference, how as a community we can come together and help push security forward.
I think Alex and I's job working day to day in an organization, being the security guys, it's really easy to have us walk into a room and be like, oh man, here comes a security guy who's going to tell me how I can't do stuff. So trying to be positive makes a big difference.
Enablers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In a good way.
Be an enabler, and not of codependency, but of technical innovation, right? Uh-huh. I guess my final point would just be that we have so many opportunities to improve things here in the Colorado community and wherever you are. Step up and do it, right? It's the more you can be a participant or a leader, actively engaged with what's happening in the community, the better off we all are. Yes, we're going to have to be an audience part of the time, but man, find those opportunities, something you're excited to do, go jump on top of it, and go help us solve the problems.
And if you need a connection or somebody to join in with you or want to know where to get plugged in, either of us at New Cyber Frontier or at Colorado Eagle Security, we'll help with that.
Fantastic. Well, Chris, thanks so much for getting together. Hopefully we can make this a semi-regular thing. We can check in every once in a while. And
definitely. It sounds great.
Keep the Denver-Colorado Springs relationship going.
Make Colorado the center of the cyber universe. Absolutely.
I like that.
All right.
Have a good one.
You too.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.